Chapter 2. We were only waiting for the funding to go ahead with it, said Higgins. We had the team assembled. We had a candidate. Everything was ready to go. Only we didn't have the funds until you hit the Borodini enclave and we took it down. They were so impressed with your performance that they okayed the funds within 2 days after the story hit the press. The media was playing it up big, and Gates and I had no trouble convincing them to go ahead with the next phase of the project. The next phase, said Steele. Project Stalker, Higgins said. The first of a new generation of cyborgs. The eventual goal was to have at least one cyborg assigned to each urban strike force unit and then start production on cyborgs for the military. One cyborg could do the work of over a dozen, 2 dozen men. It would enable us to free up a lot of manpower to get the cities and especially the outlying provinces back under control, establish new agro communes and industrial facilities with the people to protect them, do something about the shortages and the lawlessness, and start pulling this country back together once again. And with more funding for the ongoing work on Project Download, Higgins continued, we'd be able to produce more biochips, allowing more people to interface directly with computers, programming them with knowledge that would save years and untold effort and expense. We'd be able to turn out trained police and military personnel within a matter of hours, produce highly skilled technicians in a matter of days, scientists in only a few weeks. It would be an incredible step forward for the entire human race. Think what we could accomplish. But the damn legislators that were dragging their heels, they wanted to be certain that the process was perfected. They were paranoid as hell about the media getting out of hand and screaming, mind control. They wanted to make sure they had public support behind them, Higgins said. So they wanted to go ahead with the cyborg project because it was more visible, more glamorous. But they wanted to proceed slowly. First you here in Midtown, then Stalker, who was slated for assignment to the Boston Strike Force, then another one. Taking it in easy steps, getting the public used to the idea before they sprang the concept of people interfacing with computers on a mass scale. Technology still scares the hell out of most people. They haven't forgotten the bio war. Until you took down the Borodini enclave, Gates and I had to fight the finance community for every last red cent. You were a hero. You helped us turn it all around. The news media loved you. They voted us a budget in record time. And now this has to happen. It's a disaster. An absolute disaster. What happened? Steele asked. What went wrong? Stalker went insane, said Higgins wearily. I don't know why he started acting strange as soon as he was brought online. At first, Gates thought it was just a normal stress reaction, much like you had when you first came out of your coma to discover that you had a computer for a brain. It seemed perfectly understandable. Something like that can be one hell of a shock. Stalker didn't take it well, but there was much more to it than that. Were you in on this? Steele asked Cooper. Dev shook his head and lit up another cigarette. He had been a non-smoker when he first arrived from Los Alamos to join the project. Now he chain-smoked endlessly. I only just found out about it, he said. Right after Stalker ran amok, he looked at Higgins. Damn it, Higgins, you should have told me. You should have brought me in on this. I might have been able to do something to prevent it. Higgins shook his head. I'm afraid I couldn't do that, Doctor. Why, for God's sake? I'm not at liberty to go into that all right now, said Higgins, but rest assured, we will discuss it later. Right now, the most important thing is for Stalker to be neutralized before he can cause any more damage. And that's where I come in. Is that it? Steele said. Yes, that's where you come in, said Higgins. You've got to find him, Steele. You've got to find him and take him out. You're the only one who'd stand any chance against him. You saw what he did out there. It'll take us weeks to repair all the damage. People have died. Valuable equipment's been destroyed. Priceless data has been damaged, perhaps lost irretrievably. And there's no telling what he'll do now that he's loose out there somewhere in the city. He's death on two legs. He could take out an entire Strike Force unit without even breaking a sweat. "He's that good," said Steele. "Oh, yeah," said Higgins with a grimace. "He's that good. He was designed to be."
"Tell me about him," Steele said. "What's he got?"
Higgins looked at him for almost a full 20 seconds, then looked down at the table. "I don't know exactly," he said.
"What the hell do you mean you don't know? What are his capabilities? What kind of weapon systems did you put in?"
"I can only tell you some of it," said Higgins. "He was so new, I hadn't yet been fully briefed on his updates from the original design. Hell, I'm the project administrator, Steele. Gates was in charge of the design team. Thanks largely to you, we'd received more funding than we had expected, and he and Dr. Gold had incorporated a number of improvements into the original design. I don't know exactly what they did. They didn't tell me. They're both dead."
"What about the team that put him together?"
asked Steele. "Dr. Nakamura was in charge of the surgical team that worked on him," said Higgins, "and she's in the hospital in critical condition. We don't know if she'll pull through. We're trying to get the other members of the team back together for a full debriefing, but that will take a while, and we can't waste any time."
"What about the files?" Steele said. "Gates and Gold surely kept files in what they were doing."
"You saw what it looked like out there," Higgins said. "Over half the equipment's been destroyed. Gates always entered his files directly into the databanks. He never kept anything on paper. It'll be days before we can completely clean up the mess out there, and weeks, perhaps months, before we can reconstitute the data, assuming we can even recover it in the first place."
"So what you're telling me is that you've made yourself another cyborg, but you don't know exactly what his capabilities are or what his weapon systems he has,"
said Steele. "Yeah, I'm afraid that's about it," said Higgins. Steele let out a long breath.
"Terrific," he said. "So I've got to stop him somehow without knowing what he's got. And since he's a new and improved model, odds are he can take me, right?"
Higgins moistened his lips nervously and added, "I'm afraid so, yes. However, there are one or two things about his weapon systems I can tell you. Based on reports from the survivors, he's got a built-in laser turret in his left arm, and his right arm fires plasma charges."
"Plasma charges?"
"That's how he knocked out most of the equipment," Higgins said. "Gates and Gold apparently went all out. They wanted to show what we could do given the resources. They incorporated state-of-the-art technology in it. And then some."
"Jesus Christ," said Steele.
"Can't we update Steele to match Stalker's capabilities?" asked Cooper.
"How?" said Higgins. "Stalker wrecked the entire complex. Gates is dead. Gold is dead. Nakamura may not pull through. We've lost most of our equipment and our files, and Stalker slaughtered over half our personnel. It'll be weeks before we can put it all back together again. It'll eat up our entire budget. We simply don't have the time, the ability, or the resources. You can get some help from Strike Force, but aside from that, Steele's going to have to make do as best he can. But you've got to take him out fast, Steele. We've got to try to avoid any publicity on this." Steele grimaced wryly.
"How the hell do you figure on doing that?"
"I don't care how you do it," Higgins said. "I'll call Chief Hardesty at the Strike Force headquarters and tell him that this is a top priority, top secret government operation, and you're to have carte blanche in conducting it. But we've got to try to keep a lid on this somehow, or it could ruin everything we've worked for."
"I've got to have a little more to work with," Steele said. "For one thing, I don't even know what Stalker looks like."
Higgins took a deep breath and let it out slowly. "Yes, you do. You know him, or at least you knew him once, before he became what he is now."
"What are you talking about?"
said Steele, frowning. "He's your old partner, McTaylor." Dev Cooper gave a start and stared at Higgins with astonishment. Steele suddenly felt his guts turn to water.
"That's impossible!" He said, Mick Taylor's dead. He was killed when Borodini's men ambushed us in no man's land. I saw him die.
No, said Higgins. He's still very much alive. We were able to revive him, though there wasn't much left to revive. His entire body was riddled with shrapnel, and he was very badly burned, even worse than you were. But we managed to keep him alive on life support until we had the funds to begin his reconstruction. Steele gaped at him with disbelief.
You mean to tell me all this time Mick has been alive here?
That's right, said Higgins. We had him sequestered on the level below this one until we were ready to proceed with the project.
And you didn't tell me!
There was no need for you to know. Besides, we didn't know if we were going to get the funding. It was touch and go. He could have slipped away from us at any time.
You bastard, Steele said. You rotten son of a bitch. That man was my partner, my best friend.
Was your partner, Steele, said Higgins. He was your best friend. The Mick Taylor you know, you knew, doesn't exist anymore. He's only Stalker. And Stalker is a dangerous homicidal maniac. A machine out of control. A deadly machine. A machine that must be stopped.
By another machine, like me, said Steele.
I didn't say that.
You didn't have to.
My God, Higgins, said Dev Cooper.
Didn't it even occur to you that...
That will be enough, Doctor, Higgins snapped. You and I have plenty to discuss, but this is not the time. Steele, I want to make absolutely certain that you understand the situation. The cyborg that you're after is not Mick Taylor. The man you knew... is dead. You saw what he did out there. Would Mick Taylor do anything like that?
No,
said Steele softly.
No, he wouldn't.
Then you have your assignment, Higgins said. Use whatever resources it takes. Get Strike Force to help you on this. You know the men. You can pick your own team. But Stalker must be stopped at any cost.
Right, said Steele, getting to his feet. I need to use a phone. I have to call Raven. Let her know what's happening.
There's no need for her to know about this. Security is...
Oh, screw security, Steele snapped. Without Raven's help, we would never have pulled off the assault on the Borodini Enclave. I trust her, and if that's not good enough for you, then that's just too damn bad.
All right, don't get your back up. I'll have security escort you upstairs. You can use a secure line in my office. I don't want any leaks.
Leaks,
said Steele. He snorted derisively.
Within 24 hours, you'll have the whole media all over you. There's no way you'll be able to keep something like this under wraps. They'll be on you like a fox on a duck, Higgins, and you better be ready with some answers.
He slammed the door behind him.
Are you all right?
Said Raven as soon as she picked up the phone.
Yeah, I'm okay, but the project isn't. We've got trouble. Big trouble.
We've got some trouble here as well,
she said. He tensed.
What is it?
Your ex-wife is here.
Janice?
Steele said.
She's there?
She's sitting right here on the couch. Security didn't want to let her up at first, but I told them that we'd be all right. They still scanned her and gave her a full body search. She wasn't very happy about it, and I don't think she's very happy about me either.
What's she doing there? What does she want?
You got me, lover. She won't tell me. Nice ladies like her don't talk to girls like me. But she seems very upset about something. She's been crying.
Jesus! Her timing is fucking incredible! I'll be right over.
All right, doctor, Higgins said once they were back in his office on the 22nd floor. You wanted to talk?
Why? Asked Dev. Why was I kept out of the loop? Why wasn't I brought in on this?
The answer's very simple, Doctor, Higgins said. You've become a security risk. I wasn't certain I could trust you. Dev Cooper stared at him.
What the hell are you talking about?
Come on, who do you think you're talking to, Cooper? Higgins said. Did you really think you could keep secrets from me? Did you think I wouldn't find out about that program?
What program?
Higgins rolled his eyes. Please spare me the innocent act, okay? I know all about that backup copy you've got of Steel's operating program. Kate's made a copy for you, contrary to all regulations. I know that you've been working with it, you and Gates. And I know he wanted to tell me about it, but you blackmailed him into keeping quiet by threatening to report him for taking classified material home with him. You had my apartment bugged? Of course I had your apartment bugged, said Higgins. And with good reason, as it turns out. If it would safeguard the security of the government, I'd have a bug placed in every bedroom in this country. I ought to strip your clearance. By rights, I ought to have you thrown in jail. And I would, too, if I didn't need you right now. Jesus, Cooper said. Did you think we were playing games here, Doctor? Higgins said. Do you have any idea how much is at stake? What the hell did you think you were doing? I wasn't committing treason, if that's what you're getting at, said Dev. Technically, that's exactly what you did, said Higgins. He held up his hand to forestall Cooper's reply. Oh, I know you weren't thinking of selling that information or anything like that, but you've been doing some very peculiar things with that program, and I'd like very much to know what you've been up to. I wasn't up to anything, said Cooper. Look, you brought me out here to perform an almost impossible task. I was supposed to be the therapist to the first man in history who's ever received an artificial brain. Do you even have the slightest conception what a task like that entails? I was breaking entirely new ground in the field of psychiatry. There was no literature, no studies, absolutely nothing to guide me. I was groping in the dark like a blind man. When you first brought me out here from Los Alamos, you told me I was going to be doing pioneering research in the field of psycho-cybernetics. You people were the one who put Steel together. I was the one who would have to make sure his mind kept functioning normally. A computer mind programmed with human mental engrams. Something like that has never existed before. And I was expected to do my job with a patient who's got a natural antipathy towards psychiatrists. A patient I had only limited access to because you had to get him out on the streets, on the proven ground, as it were, getting you the right publicity you needed to get more funding from the legislature. I had nothing but an hour with him here, half an hour with him there, whenever you or he felt it was convenient. How in the world did you expect me to conduct any kind of scientific observation under those circumstances? So you decided to pull a copy of his backup program for yourself so you could work with it at home, said Higgins. Gates gave me the idea, Cooper said. He says that if I couldn't have access to Steel as much as I needed, there was no reason why I couldn't have the next best thing, a copy of the engram matrix he'd been programmed with. He said he could make a copy of the background program for me, hook up a voice synthesizer for peripheral program to sound just like Steel, and I'd be able to conduct my sessions with it at home. He said it would be the same as having Steel there, since it would be an exact copy of the data he'd been programmed with. It would respond exactly as he responded. The only difference would be that I wouldn't have his body there, his actual physical self. He didn't seem to think it was necessary to go through with all the red tape of requesting official clearance, since I already had AAA clearance to work on the project, and I was Steel's therapist. Are you seriously trying to tell me that you didn't realize you were violating security regulations? Higgins said. Yes, yes, of course I know, said Cooper. But how could I possibly pass up such an opportunity? Don't you realize the implications? It could have opened up the door to a revolution in the science of psychotherapy. If you could download a patient's personality and make a backup copy, you'd be able to try out therapeutic techniques by working with the program, and you'd know in advance how the patient would respond. It had the potential of completely eliminating the risk factor from psychotherapy. You could dig deeper with the program, a way you'd never dare to do with the actual patient himself. I saw it as an opportunity, not only to do my work with Steel, but also to try the concept of computer surrogate therapy. And that's all you were doing? Yes! You didn't do anything to the program itself? To the backup copy that you pulled, I mean? You and Gates didn't modify it in any way? No, of course not. Why would we? Then why is it acting so strangely? What do you mean? I've got complete transcriptions of your sessions with the program, Doctor. It's responding in a very peculiar manner. So you know all about it then, said Dev. I heard what you said to Gates. Some sort of nonsense about it being self-aware, alive. You don't expect me to believe that. It's true, said Dev. It isn't nonsense. The program is self-aware. It is alive. You're making the same mistaken assumption that Gates made. You're thinking of it as merely another computer program, a sophisticated artificial intelligence program. That ain't what it is. Because he spent so much time working on debugging Steele's engram data, Gates allowed himself to the conceit of thinking it was a program that he'd written. Only he didn't write it. All Gates really did was move information in the form of engram data from one place to another. The program isn't artificial intelligence. It's a real intelligence. Human mental engrams downloaded from a human brain and translated into software. What the hell do you think Steele is? Cooper continued. You think he's a machine? Yes, his brain is a computer, but it's programmed with data comprised of his own personality, his own identity. Do you think the backup program is different simply because it's a file in a computer without a body? It's the same exact material that is contained in Steele's cybernetic brain, a backup copy of his Varus soul. Did you expect it to respond like a machine? Higgins frowned. Gates said, Gates was a brilliant man, said Dev, but he was suffering from tunnel vision, a sort of tunnel vision that was entirely self-induced. Gates didn't want to believe that the program was self-aware because he didn't want to believe that Steele is self-aware, not in any human sense anyway. I don't understand, said Higgins. You've lost me. Unlike you, Higgins, Dev said, Gates was troubled with the little thing that's called a conscience, and to keep from being plagued by guilt, he devised an elaborate form of practice in denial. Gates convinced himself, with some purely technical justification, that Steele wasn't human because Steele had died. The moment brain function ceases, a man is considered legally dead. Gates used that rationale to convince himself that Steele had died the moment his brain, organic brain was removed. Only his brain function had never really ceased, did it? It was simply moved from one place to another. Gates chose not to think of it that way. The moment Steele's mental engrams were downloaded and translated into software, Gates chose to think of them as nothing more than a highly sophisticated AI program that he wrote. This gave him the luxury of seeing Steele as nothing more than a machine, a human body augmented with nice steel prosthetics and operated by cybernetics, but essentially a body from which the essence of humanity had flown. He deceived himself. Why would he do that? Asked Higgins, frowning. To avoid having to deal with the moral implications of what he'd done, said Cooper, and to avoid the ethical implications inherent in having a backup copy of Steele's operating program. That was standard procedure, Higgins said. We had to have a backup copy in case anything happened to the original. Exactly, Cooper said. Only it's one thing to make a backup copy of a computer program, but it's another thing entirely to duplicate a man's soul. And that's exactly what the backup copy of Steele's operating program is. A human personality reduced to software. A duplicate human personality. Christ, to you, it was just SOP. Make a backup copy. But you don't even realize what you've done, do you? You've Xeroxed a human being. You've made an electronic clone. Higgins sat silent for a moment as it sank in. I never thought of it that way, he said. Neither did Gates, said Cooper. He didn't want to think of it that way. When I forced him to confront it, he didn't want to deal with it. It upset him terribly. I never should have rammed down his throat that way. From a professional standpoint, it was unforgivable, but I didn't have the time to handle Gates with kid gloves. I was worried about Steele, who's having a lot more trouble than you realize. And I was concerned about the program, because it's much more than an ordinary computer program. It's a human identity. It thinks. It feels. It lives. I came out here to take care of one patient, and now I've got two. One that's a cyborg, one that's engram data. But they're both the same man.
I see, said Higgins. At least I think I see. But then why did you want to keep this from me? If Steele's having problems with his programming, we've got to go in and do something about it before the situation gets way worse. Dev Cooper shook his head.
You still don't understand, he said.
Then explain it to me.
I knew that there was something bothering Steele, Dev said. I knew that he was keeping something from me, but I had no way of knowing what it was, at least not until I got a backup copy of his program. I had Julie Nakamura show me how to install an imperative into the program.
set of commands that would require it to answer me even if it didn't want to. You see, an ordinary computer program gives you whatever data you request from it, so long as it's contained within its files, because an ordinary computer program does not have free will. It does not want to answer a question, but the Engram Matrix has free will, so it can refuse. What I needed was a sort of electronic equivalent of truth serum, and the imperative that Julie Nakamura wrote for me provided that.
I see, said Higgins. So the program had to tell you what was bothering it, what was bothering Steele, whether it wanted to or not.
Precisely, Cooper said. There were bound to be certain inconsistencies between Steele's Engram Matrix and my backup copies, because since the time the Matrix was loaded into Steele's brain, he had certain experiences that the backup copy obviously hadn't had. However, I felt reasonably certain that whatever trouble Steele was having hadn't come about as a result of those experiences, but stemmed from something far more fundamental, something that was inherent in the Matrix itself right from the beginning. You with me so far?
I think so. Go on.
Well, despite the fact that it was still under an imperative to answer me, Dev said, it still resisted. Steele's got an amazingly strong willpower. It was really quite unsettling. It was just like talking with the patient, only the patient had been booted up on my computer. And it wasn't easy. I was afraid of what might happen if the Matrix discovered that it was only a backup copy. I wanted it to respond as if it were really Steele. And in a sense, it really was. Is. Hell, even the semantics of the situation is difficult. Anyway, I was allowed to believe that it was Steele, the original Steele, that is, only it was on downtime, brought partially online so that it could talk to me. I figured this would be the count for its not being aware of my feeling in its body, and the Matrix bought it. At first.
What do you mean, at first?
I'll get to that. I started digging, trying to find out what was disturbing Steele, and just as I suspected, it turned out to be related to the ancillary Engram data that Gates had originally used to supplement the Matrix. And Steele's been having nightmares, dreams in which he's been reliving experiences that he never actually had. In another sense, he has to have them, because now they're a part of his memory. They've been programmed into him. I tried explaining to Gates, but the subconscious is an extremely complicated thing. It isn't something you can simply treat as discrete data. It's more of like a sort of thick psychological soup, for lack of a better way of putting it. Gates was trained as a cybernetics engineer, not as a psychiatrist. He was used to think of things in mathematical terms. But you can't apply that kind of systemology to the subconscious. The operative word really is matrix. It's all blended together. You can't really isolate sections of it like bits of information in a computer program. It simply doesn't work that way. When Gates used ancillary Engram data downloaded from the other subjects to fill out Steele's program, Cooper continued, he also wound up loading fragments of other people's subconsciousness into Steele's memory. These ghost personality fragments, as I call them, are now expressing themselves through Steele's own subconscious. They've been blended into it. And in his dreams, he's reliving bits and pieces of other people's lives, experience and memories he can't account for, but he still feels like they're his, even though he knows they're not, because they've been blended into his matrix and they feel like a part of his identity. In effect, they are. The danger with that is that it might lead to his personality fragmented.
Then we're going to have to go in and erase them, Higgins said.
That's just the point, said Dev. You can't. That is, you probably can, but not without risking damage to Steele's identity. And he knows that. And that's why he hasn't said anything about it. That's why he's kept it to himself. He's desperately trying to hang on to whatever he has left in his own identity. He's afraid to lose part of himself. And if you tried going into his matrix to erase the ghosts, it would be like trying to treat someone with an advanced case of lung cancer. You can't excise the cancer without also cutting out pieces of the lung. Steele's afraid that if we go in and try to debug his program and erase the ghosts, then we also erase some very fundamental parts of him. He might not come out the same, and he's probably right.
So, what do we do? Asked Higgins.
Not we, me, said Cooper. This is what you brought me here out for. The only way to deal with this is to use conventional psychotherapy to try to figure out a way to help him resolve this problem, to accept the ghosts and learn to live with them, because otherwise he might well end up like Stalker, succumbing to the electronic insanity.
Great, said Higgins. And I had to send him out to stop Stalker with all of this going on inside him. The trouble is, I had no choice. Steele's all that I've got. I haven't got the time to bring him in for extended therapy.
You may not have to, Dev said. Not if I can use the backup program to conduct some computer surrogate therapy and come up with a course of treatment. The problem is, it might not let me.
What do you mean? Why not? It's resistant the imperative, said Cooper. It's very perceptive. It's got good instincts, Steele's instincts, and it's got a computer's probable capability of analyzing vocal response patterns. It's analyzed mine and figured out that I was trying to lie to it. It hasn't quite put it all together yet, but it knows that it hasn't got a body, and it wants to know why. End of chapter.